He obeyed, even though he continued to tremble and sob in a way their Nick never would. It broke her heart to see the handsome face she knew so well and not see recognition in those beautiful blue eyes. Her Nick was powerful and defiant in everything he did, cocksure and sweet. The boy on this bed held none of the charisma or courage of her boyfriend and enemy. Cody bit her lip as she used her powers to scan him. To her horror, he was completely human. Not a drop of Malachi power, or Nick's true soul, remained inside his body. That wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, except for the fact that he still had Malachi blood running through those veins. Even without the powers, the blood carried its own special properties that made Nick a very attractive trophy for those who wanted to use his blood for nefarious activities. For that matter, his heart, eyes, or any Malachi organ, bones, and skull were even more prized by those who practiced the darkest magic. A Malachi was the rarest and strongest of all demon kin. Alive, they were lethal and hunted. Dead, they were priceless. It was one of the reasons a Malachi usually used the last of his powers to combust himself as he died. That ensured that no other creature could use any part of the Malachi to go after his son, to make sure nothing could ever enslave him once he was dead. The Malachi was the most loathed and pursued creature in existence. He lived a life fraught with enemies, danger, and battle. And this boy in front of her was in no way a fighter or a survivor. He was kibble. And Nick's enemies would tear this kid apart. Scared for them all, she met Caleb's furious glower. Could this have been done by whomever or whatever kidnapped his parents last night? Nick gasped. My parents were kidnapped? She patted his cheeks. No, Nick, not your parents. I don't understand. He panicked even more. As soon as he pulled away from her and cringed against the wall, a blast shot past her into him, one that sent Nick sprawling unconscious onto the floor. Gaping, she arched a brow at Zavid as he lowered his hand. With a loud snort, he rolled his eyes at her. Oh, like you didn't want to knock him unconscious. He's been whining like a brat for the last hour. I couldn't take it anymore. Instead of looking offended, you should be glad I didn't kill him for the headache he's given me. Cody scoffed at the idle threat. Because of the laws that govern demons, Zavid couldn't harm his master, not without causing himself an unbelievable level of agony for the rest of eternity. You can't kill him. You seriously underestimate my threshold for pain. She felt a heavy desire to strangle him and test that boast. I thought you said your powers were drained. They're slowly coming back. Shall we see if I have enough yet for another blast? Stop, Caleb growled. Both of you. We don't have time to fight among ourselves. We have to figure out why someone separated Nick's body from his soul and who that creature is, because let's face it, they didn't do this for us, or to make our lives easier. He'd barely finished that sentence before the room went completely dark, as if someone had flipped the switch on the sun and washed the earth in night shadows. Cody cursed as a new fear wrapped itself around her heart. Please, someone tell me that's not an eclipse. Caleb was the first one to the window. I'm not saying it's an eclipse, but this round, moon-like object is completely covering the sun. And it's really windy outside. Of course it was. Cody groaned in agony of the portents. Still sitting on the floor, Zavid rubbed his hand against his chin. Does this have any significance? Sighing, she gave him a pained glare. Not to anyone other than all sentient life forms on this planet. Never thought I'd envy a cockroach. Zavid rose slowly to his feet and went into a predator's crouch. He turned a small circle in the room.
You feel that?
Both she and Caleb nodded. There was no mistaking it. The very air grew heavy, thick, like the hottest summer on the sun. Thunder clapped so hard it shook the building and rattled the windows an instant before a heavy blood rain poured down outside, drenching the sidewalks with red water that ran like blood through the street. The winds outside howled with the sound of a dragon's cry.
Well, Caleb said slowly, we can look on the bright side.
She couldn't wait to hear this. And that is?
Modern man will think it's from a meteorite or some other natural phenomenon. At least no one will be screaming and running for the mountains.
Yeah, but they should. Zavid scowled at them.
What do you two know that I don't?
Cody glanced to the unconscious Nick before she answered. Ever heard the term Usumgalu?
The Great Snake? Yeah, what about it?
The door on its prison is now open for business, and they're being summoned together. Caleb jerked his chin toward the window. That piercing screech torturing us? That's the sound of the Sarudara. That was one of the 7 demon generals who made up the Usumgalu. Each one was deadly on his own, but when the 7 came together, they were invincible. Not even the gods could stop them.
The Blood King?
Zavid laughed nervously.
That's not possible. Only the Malachi can summon together the Usumgalu and unleash his generals to attack.
Yeah, I know, Caleb said, his voice laden with sarcasm. But Nick's father was killed in battle last night. Whenever the elder Malachi dies, his generals are summoned together from their prisons for one task. To end the world.
What?
Zavid breathed in disbelief.
Are you serious?
Cody gave a subtle nod. After the death of his wife, an unborn child, the first Malachi arranged this as the final up yours to the gods to ensure that if they broke their word and killed him, he'd take the world with him. Only his son, a full-fledged Malachi, can command the combined forces of the Usumgalu and send them back into their holes. Zavid went pale.
And if we don't have a Malachi to stop them?
Cody rubbed her hand over her face as she contemplated that nightmare. The 6 demon generals will join forces and summon together their armies. Then they will cast down all the orders of this earth and rain hell itself upon all sentient beings for eternity. And no one, not even the gods, will be able to stop them. Caleb flashed a taunting grin at the hellhound.
Doesn't it make you all warm and fuzzy? Just think what they're going to do to us for fun and prizes.
Zavid cursed under his breath.
We have to find the real Nick and stop this.
He looked at Cody.
How long do we have?
Till the new moon, roughly 3 days. At that time, the Usumgalu will unite and come into their own. Caleb let out a sound of disgust.
Even if we unbind Nick's powers, there's no way he can learn to control them in 72 hours.
Cody refused to be daunted. She'd faced much worse odds. Of course, she hadn't really survived those, but still. They had no choice except to succeed. Then we have to stop them before they're freed and can summon their armies.
Where do we start?
Zavid asked.
Absolutely no clue.
Cody glanced over the unconscious Nick on the floor before she met Caleb's gaze. Did you happen to find out anything useful from our new friend before Cujo blasted him?
He's from 2002, and as near as I could ascertain, he lives here in New Orleans and attends St. Richard's.
Her jaw dropped. 2002? Is he the same age as our Nick, or older? Caleb used his powers to put Nick back into bed. Then he buried Nick under the comforter. He's 16 in his year, but apparently his reality is very different from our Nick's. Unlike our favorite pain in the neck, this one is completely normal, as are his parents. Which made sense. While there were multiple dimensions and alternate realities, they were all bound by the laws of the source, and those laws stipulated that only one Malachi could exist at one time, period, which was what had made her job so hard. Tracking down the one through time wasn't easily done, especially when he'd been hidden as carefully as Nick had. Caleb sighed in disgust. "I don't know about the two of you, but time travel isn't one of my powers." He looked at Zavid, who sank back to the floor. The hellhound leaned his head back against the wall.
"Same here.
That is a very special and extremely guarded power. Only a tiny handful of species are allowed it. And Amons aren't one of them. Because the repercussions were dire. One misstep in time, and the entire fabric of the universe could unravel. Even the gods tended to avoid time travel, and woe to any who willfully tampered with the time sequence. It was the most forbidden of all actions, and the most heavily punished. As with all things, any action taken caused an equal and opposite reaction. It was why she hadn't killed Nick yet, even though she had every right to, and had been ordered to see him dead. Why she was so careful about tampering with the lives around her. Hers was a sacred calling, and it wasn't one she took lightly. Caleb narrowed his gaze on her.
"What about you?"
"What about me what?"
"Can you time travel?"
She intentionally didn't answer his question. Instead, she turned her attention to Zavid. "What about your sister? She was working with Grimm to bring Nick to him. Could she be behind this?" By the shocked expression on Zavid's face, she could tell he'd had no idea that his sister had taken part in setting Nick up. The pain and grief in his bright lavender eyes seared her and made her ache that she'd caused him such bitter agony. It was a pain she was all too acquainted with. His breathing ragged, Zavid shook his head. When he spoke, his voice was thick, with raw, unshed tears.
"My sister's dead. She died a long time ago."
Caleb's eyes shone with his own sympathy for the hellhound. Like them, he'd lost everything that mattered to him, and it was hard to make it through the day, knowing that you'd never see your loved ones again.
"Grimm must have resurrected her for some reason."
His jaw slack, Zavid snapped his attention to Caleb.
"You saw her?"
There was so much agonized hope in those words that it brought tears to Cody's eyes.
"I did.
She was trying to free you from hell." A single tear slid down his handsome cheek before he angrily wiped it away.
"My sister was everything to me."
Cody had to look away as unwanted memories flooded her with pain. She knew that tone of voice, had heard it from her own overprotective brothers on more than one occasion. She was younger? He nodded, then wrapped his arms around himself as if he had a sudden chill.
"I swore to my parents when they were killed that I'd never allow any harm to come to her."
He swallowed hard.
"I failed them all."
Caleb stepped closer to him with a pose that said he wanted blood from the ones who'd harmed a woman. A throwback to the day he'd lost the only woman he'd ever loved to the hands of his enemies.
"What happened?"
A furious tick started in Zavid's sculpted jaw.
"She fell in love with an idiot, and when he ran afoul of hell,
she sold herself to the goddess to save him from his stupidity. Needless to say, it didn't work out for either of them." Cody winced as she realized what had happened to the poor Amon demon on the floor.
You went in her stead?
He nodded. I knew what slavery meant for our kind. I couldn't let my sister do that. I knew she'd never survive it. And given the scars on his body, he was right.
Nick had told her that the Norse gods had used Zavid for gladiatorial matches, where they'd bled him to the brink of death, that they had dehumanized him to the point that he hadn't even remembered his own name when Nick had met him. They had called Zavid Beast, and a beast was what he'd become, all he'd known.
Only Nick had seen through the feral hatred to the heart of the man. Nick alone had saved Zavid when anyone else would have put their head down and kept going, leaving the hellhound to die, especially after the way Zavid had attacked Nick and Caleb. And her.
How did your sister die?
Caleb asked quietly. Zavid swallowed hard before he answered.
Zerelda tried to free me from the goddess.
In that moment, Cody finally saw the true heart inside Zavid that had called out to Nick. The Malachi was always able to see straight through someone's facade, to know their weaknesses so that he could destroy them more easily. Up until Nick, every Malachi had used that knowledge to hurt and to wound, to kill. Nick used it only for good. There were so many reasons she didn't want to kill Nick, even though she had every right to demand his head on a platter, even though she was under orders to do so. Trying not to think about that or her past, she met Caleb's frown.
You think Zerelda might know something about Grimm's plan?
No, but she might know something useful.
Caleb shifted his gaze to Zavid.
You're the only one of us who can summon her.
He laughed bitterly.
No, I can't. Hell stripped that power from me as punishment after Zerelda tried to release me. I have no telepathy whatsoever. Haven't had it for centuries.
That closed that door effectively. Running out of ideas, Cody turned back to Caleb. Know any necromancers? Caleb gave her a wry grin.
Actually, I do. Talon can commune with the dead.
The Dark Hunter? Cody asked, to make sure they were traveling along the same idea path.
You know anyone better?
Yes, but she'd purposefully avoided Asheron, for many reasons. How's Talon going to react if we show up at his cabin in the middle of the day? As far as he knows, we're human kids who hang out with Nick.
Point taken,
Caleb growled. I'm out of ideas, then. That left her with only one other option, and it was the closest thing to Asheron she dared approach with something like this. Asheron's demon daughter. Let me see if I can contact Simi. Caleb laughed.
Good luck with that.
Don't scoff, O ye who has no better idea. He held his hands up in surrender.
Fine. Call me if she starts to eat you. Maybe I can stop her.
From anyone else, that might sound odd, but since Simi was a Karante demon with a ferocious appetite, it was a possibility. I think I'll be all right. Just don't let Charisse find out she has two unexpected house guests and that her baby boy isn't her baby boy. Caleb visibly cringed.
On second thought, I'd rather go with you and take my chances with Simi.
Sorry, Slugger. Charisse, at least, knows you. We can't risk her running into the other two on her own.
Fine, but the next time something puts you on its menu, I will remember this.
Yeah. Smiling, Cody flashed herself back to her house. Her smile died the moment she saw the large recurve bow on her wall over her bed. It was so hard to be with Simi when Cody knew what would one day become of them all. It was an ending they kept speeding toward, and one way or another, Cody had to derail it. And while Simi knew Cody wasn't human, she had yet to guess the truth of who and what she really was, and why she was here. Most of all, Simi had yet to realize that they were related. Every time Cody saw the demon, she wanted to hug her, to crawl into Simi's lap like she used to do when she was little, and have Simi rock her and tell her that the Simi wouldn't let anything bad happen to her, that she was the Simi's precious Akrabel. But those days were long gone, and there was much more at stake than just Cody and her family. "Simi?" Cody called, reaching out with the power she'd been taught as a toddler. Like her uncle, she had the ability to summon any Karante from any realm. She could even control them, but she wasn't into that any more than her uncle had been. She didn't believe in taking away anyone's free will, not for any reason. Within a few seconds, Simi appeared before her, yawning so wide she exposed her fangs. Her black and red hair was rumpled around her small horns, and as she stretched, her wings expanded.
"Were you napping?"
Simi shook herself and rose to tower over Cody.
"No, silly semi-human. The Simi was sleeping. I know it's daylight here, but in Similand, it's the middle of the night, and I was barbecuing dream sheep in my sleep."
Simi cocked her head as she took note of her surroundings.
"Where's Akri Nick?"
Cody bit her lip. "We have a bit of a problem with that."
"You done broke up again? No, Akra Cody, say it ain't so."
"It ain't so." Simi formed a small O with her lips as she considered the alternatives.
"You lose him? Where was he when he got lost? You know, you gots to be careful with them boy people. They wander off and do all kinds of strange things. Akri once accidentally wandered off and left the Simi alone in a whole field of moomoos, and forgot to tell the Simi that they weren't to be eaten. They's good, but off menu. Made that old Poseidon god very angry."
Cody laughed. "I didn't lose him like that, Simi."
"Oh, then what did you do?"
"I left him to sleep, but I think while he was sleeping, he was sucked into another dimension and into the future, and someone else is now here in his body. Can you time travel?" Simi sucked her breath in sharply.
"Akra Cody, that's a bad, bad idea. But can you do it?" "The Simi can do lots of things, and as Akri say, just because you can doesn't mean you should. But in this case, not without Akri, and he won't never let the Simi do that. He'd sooner give the Simi people to eat."
Cody sighed as she realized she'd have to go this alone. Not like that was any different than what her existence had been, but still, she'd hoped to have some form of backup when she went into the unknown.
"Then I'll have to do it myself."
"Alone? What? Why would you want to go and do that?"
"I have no choice, Simi. It has to be done. Nick can't stay unprotected."
"How you find him when you don't know where it is you lost him?"
"I have a general idea of where he is, kind of."
Simi quirked an eyebrow at that.
"What if he moves? Boys tend to do that. A lot. They're not real stationary creatures, especially when they're young and virile."
Cody laughed in spite of her fear. Simi had a valid point.
"Without his powers, I don't know if anyone can find him. We have nothing to use to pinpoint him with, but I have to try."
Pursing her lips, Simi tapped her forefinger against them.
"Why don't Akra Cody go ask Manyara? She always knows where Akri Nick is."
"Honestly, because Manyara was the one being who had the powers to see through Cody's guise, to recognize her. Even though Cody was shielded, Manyara was also the Egyptian goddess Ma'at, and as such, her powers were infinite. Since the day she had been sent to stop Nick, Cody had been very careful to fly below Manny's radar, to never look her in the eye for fear that her great aunt would see Cody's mother in her, sense the bloodline they shared. But as she heard the storms outside picking up strength as the darkest powers gathered, she knew Simi was right. They didn't have time to play around and avoid uncomfortable situations. She had to go see her great aunt and face the past. Her vision swam as tears gathered in her throat to choke her.
Is Akra Cody okay?
No. She hadn't been fine in a long, long time. But she didn't want to share that, not even with Simi. Thanks to the Malachi, she was alone in this world, and stronger than any being should ever have to be.
I'm fine, Simi. I'll go ask her, like you suggested.
As she started to flash away, Simi took her hand and squeezed it so that she could teleport with Cody. As much as she wanted Simi with her, she knew better. What she'd need to say to Manyara, Simi couldn't overhear. If the demon ever learned who and what Nakoda really was, it could cause unbelievable damage to the time sequence. Cody patted her hand.
I need to do this alone, Simi. Is that all right?
Smiling, Simi nodded.
The Simi wait here, then.
Without a second thought, Simi headed to Cody's bed to lie down, with her feet running up the wall. Simi's toes almost reached the bow Cody had received from her mother. Cody laughed as she remembered being a small child and sleeping the same way. It had driven her parents to distraction.
Are you a Karante Simi, too?
Yes, she'd always answered back, proud to sleep like her favorite aunt. Many times, she'd napped on Simi's stomach, with her legs propped on top of Simi's, while Simi kept her arms wrapped so tightly around Cody that it had been hard to breathe. Even so, Cody had never complained. Every child should be enveloped in such love. And so long as Simi held her like that, she'd known that nothing and no one could ever harm her. Not without Simi eating them whole for it. And both Simi and her husband had died while protecting Cody from the Malachi. Even now, Cody could see the horror of that night in her mind. She'd barely been school age when the Malachi's army had found their hiding place. Simi and her husband had stayed behind to hold the Malachi back while Cody's brother had run with her into the night. Ari had used his own powers to shield her from their demonic pursuers.
I will keep you safe, Bellamy. Always. Nothing's going to hurt you, so long as I live.
And just like Simi and her husband, Ari had fallen to the Malachi. Everyone Cody loved had been destroyed by the beast Nick was destined to become.
How can I fight for him?
You have no choice. Only Nick can defeat the Usumgalu. She had to save him. He was the only hope they had. The time sequence couldn't stop here. It had to go forward. Too many lives depended on her as well as the fate of the entire world. Determined, she flashed herself to the front porch of Manyara's small duplex condo that Manyara had once shared with Nick and his mother. Cody took a moment to compose herself. Because Manyara was her blood family, it was always hard for her to be around Manyara and not betray herself. Every time Cody saw the petite primal goddess, she wanted to throw herself into her arms and cry, to tell Manyara who she was and what was to come. But she couldn't, not without destroying everything. With a ragged breath, Cody knocked on the door and braced herself to meet her aunt. Dressed in a light yellow cotton dress, Manyara opened the door and arched a brow at her. Today, she had her sister locks curled about her beautiful face. Cody ached to bury her hand in them like she'd done as a child. Back then, whenever Manyara visited, she'd rock Cody and sing ancient Egyptian lullabies to her. Cody would twist her fingers in Manyara's hair and bury her face in the rose and hyacinth-scented strands until she fell asleep, nestled in Manny's warmth. How she loved this woman. Manyara smiled at her. "Miss Cody, to what do I owe this honor?" Cody opened her mouth to tell her what had happened to Nick, but no sound would come out. Suddenly, she couldn't breathe at all. Her throat tightened as if someone was choking her. Tears gathered in her eyes. Then everything went dark.
Chapter 4. Nick came awake to the sight of Amanda and Tabitha standing over him. His cheeks stung as if someone, probably Tabitha, had slapped him a few times in an attempt to revive him. Amanda let out a relieved breath. Tabitha snorted.
"We're in luck, T. He's not dead. Yet. We didn't kill him. Hallelujah. We don't have to call the lawyers or hide another body."
"Another?" Scared of that thought, Nick scowled at the familiar raven-haired goth queen who was decked out in black leather pants and a black bell-sleeved shirt. This was what he knew. Thank God he was home. "What'd you do, Tabitha? Run me over again?" She duplicated his frown.
"When did I run you over the first time?"
Selena slapped at her arm. "I told you, Tab, he's from an alternate place where he knew you." Nick winced at Selena's disgruntled voice. Dang, it hadn't been a dream after all. He was really here. With them.
Worse? They'd multiplied.
There was now a total of 5 Devereaux sisters. Tabitha, Amanda, Tiana, and Selena he knew. The other one he'd seen in a picture pinned by the register in the store.
"I'm Tiana," the one closest to him said.
He caught himself before he mentioned that they'd already met here, in this store. But that had been in a different life and in a different time.
"And you?"
he asked the other one, who was leaning against the counter, looking completely bored.
"Karma."
"The woman who works with bulls?"
Karma snorted.
"Yeah.
And I'm the vengeful, mean one, too. You'd do well to remember that."
"Duly noted." Nick sat up slowly with Selena's help. He felt weak and dizzy, disoriented. What had happened to him?
"Now that is wicked."
He frowned at Tiana, who was staring at him like a lab experiment that had just sprouted a new head from its belly button.
"What?" "Your aura, it's..."
She locked gazes with Selena.
"He's not crazy. What he told you is true. He doesn't belong here. We have to get him back to his realm or something terrible will happen there and here."
"I don't know. He's kind of cute. Can't we keep him?"
"He's not a puppy, Tabby."
Tabitha smiled.
"Maybe, but he'd look awesome in this spiked dog collar I have at home."
Nick moved over to Amanda, who seemed to be the safest bet in this family of homicidal loons. Amanda glanced at him over her shoulder.
"For the record, if they attack, I'm throwing you at them and running for the door."
"Gee, thanks,"
she shrugged.
"How you think I've survived so long in this family?"
Tabitha cocked her head as she studied him with unsettling scrutiny.
"So what are you?"
"Exactly."
"How do you mean?"
Nick asked. She approached him slowly until she had him pinned between her and Amanda.
"You look human, but..."
She took a lock of his hair between her fingers and studied it.
"I know you're not the undead.
You're blonde, yet you're not a daemon.
Demon, maybe?"
To his shock, Amanda leaned forward and smelled him. Stepping away, Nick screwed up his face at her.
"Hey, that's gross."
Amanda shook her head.
"Can't be demon spawn.
He lacks their stench."
"Yeah, well, I did have my biweekly bath this morning." Amanda gave him a dry stare.
You still haven't answered my sister's question. What are you?
Mostly confused and, honestly, a lot scared.
Karma laughed.
At least he's not stupid.
Shaking her head, Tiana snorted.
Karma and Tabby, don't bleed him until we know what we're dealing with. His blood could be potent. 'Cause let's face it, things are only sent into alternate realities for one of two reasons.
To hide, Amanda said. Tabitha folded her arms over her chest as she eyed him with an unsettling intensity.
Or to be killed in a realm where they're weak.
Nick started to deny it, but like it or not, he was probably here to die, and they were the closest things to protection he had, and while Tabitha was extreme, she could fight.
It's definitely one of the two. And if I knew how to get here, I'd know which one was right.
Karma pulled out a knife that was similar to Nick's Malachi dagger.
You threaten my family, and I will end you.
Tiana pulled Karma's hand back.
Don't bleed him, she repeated through gritted teeth. Blood has power, and we don't know what blood he holds. Until we do, we need to keep him whole.
Karma put her knife away. Shaken and trying not to show it, Nick turned back toward Tabitha.
Do you stalk vampires and daemons here, too?
Yeah, your point?
The paranormal exists here in your world, like mine. Maybe we can find some of it to help me get back home.
Tabitha looked past him to Karma.
Sounds like we should take him to your house.
Worth a try, I guess.
Karma turned her head to Tiana.
Unless her supreme majesty objects.
Tiana rolled her eyes.
You're such a bitch.
Unaffected by the insult, she smiled.
That's karma, baby.
With a pain-filled groan, Tiana headed to the register.
Take Tabby and Mandy with you in case there's trouble. Selena, stay with me, and we'll search through our grims and see if we can find something about this.
Nick thought he was safe until Amanda held her hand up, and a knife came flying out from the counter to land in her palm. She tucked it into her back pocket.
Gaping, he was stunned.
Telekinesis, she explained nonchalantly, as if that was an everyday thing, which to him it actually was.
Yeah, I know, I'm supposed to have it myself, but where I come from, you don't believe in any of this.
Who says I believe here?
He didn't comment on that dichotomy as Amanda led him outside to her white Toyota. He got into the back while the twins took the front seat. Karma eyeballed him with blatant hostility through the window before she went to her red Honda Nighthawk and pulled on her helmet so that she could follow them. After belting herself in, Tabitha turned around to pin him with an intense stare.
Shouldn't you be in school?
I cut class.
Amanda pulled away from the curb.
You shouldn't do that.
I know, and I don't normally, but extreme circumstances led me to the path of juvenile delinquency this morning. Besides, I didn't even know what my classes were or where they were. I didn't want to look like a complete idiot. He didn't mention the fact that he'd almost passed out at school like he did in their store. Something was tugging at him, and until he knew what, he didn't want to be around innocent victims who wouldn't know how to protect themselves from the paranormal should it appear and pick a fight. For that matter, he wasn't sure if whatever it was trying to pull him back to his realm or join him in this one.
So what am I like in your world?
He smiled at Tabitha's question. Very similar to here, but your hair is shorter and you wear tighter clothes. That seemed to please her.
And Mandy?
She doesn't have any powers where I come from, at least none that any of you have talked about. She's the normal to your eccentricity.
She playfully hit Amanda on the arm.
I guess some things never change.
Amanda glanced at him in the rearview mirror.
What about you? How do you know for sure that you're not you? For one thing, I'm a lot taller in my world. I have dark hair, and my father's dead.
Tabitha gasped. Triple threat's dead.
Nick shook his head. No, in my world, he's a friend, not my dad. The man who fathered me is the one who died, not Bubba.
Interesting.
Nick didn't miss the underlying tone in Tabitha's voice. What is?
That he and you would be so different while we're not.
Yeah, I know, right? I can't figure that out. And people I know for a fact are demons in my world are regular humans here. Why is that? Instead of answering, Amanda sucked her breath in sharply.
That's what you really are, aren't you?
Yes, he is, Tabitha said before he could even part his lips to speak. You should have seen the dance Izara just did over that question. Nick gasped out loud as he was pinned to the seat with an invisible hand.
Hey, I'm not like that.
How do we know? They asked simultaneously.
Do I look evil?
Tabitha narrowed her gaze on him.
Evil seldom looks it.
Yeah, Nick choked out as the grip around his neck tightened.
But we all fight with you, and I work for a Dark Hunter.
Tabitha scowled. What's a Dark Hunter? Of course she wouldn't know that. He'd forgotten that, unlike him, Tabitha wasn't really part of their hidden world. Immortal warriors who are owned by the goddess Artemis. They spend eternity fighting daemons and anything that threatens the safety of this world, or my world, rather.
He could still be lying, Amanda said to Tabitha.
She shook her head.
No.
His aura says he's not. I believe him. He has this whole innocent puppy look.
Great.
That was so the image he was going for. He might as well be dressed as a dork again. Finally, Amanda released her death grip on him. Nick rubbed his neck, grateful he could breathe finally. Coughing, he straightened his clothes.
So, what's it like to be a demon? Tabitha asked.
Like being human? Except I have a lot of scary things who want to kill me and suck out my powers, or worse, stick me in a cage so I can serve them.
Tabitha snorted.
Sounds a lot like my life. You think that's why you were sent here? Amanda asked as she turned a corner. Something's trying to capture or kill you?
No idea. We tried to bind my powers last night. I'm thinking maybe the spell we used might have backfired?
Tabitha shook her head. No, it takes something with serious juice to rip someone from their universe and put them in another. Definitely not a misfire or runaway spell. Had to be done intentionally.
That did not make him feel any better. Kind of like a nail through his shoe.
And if it was done intentionally, where was the responsible party?
Nick looked around, nervously.
Amanda pulled into the narrow, tiny driveway of a small white shotgun. They got out as Karma parked her bike on the street in front of the house. After dismounting, she took her helmet off and held it by the strap as she joined them, then led the way to her front door. After she unlocked it, Nick followed them inside.
So why exactly are we here?
No sooner had he asked the question than a bowl went flying at his head. With reflexes honed by fighting the worst of the paranormal world that liked to ambush him, he ducked. The bowl shattered against the wall. Tabby gave him an impressed smile.
Nice reflexes.
Hey, Karma shouted out in a hostile bark. What have I told you about that? Until you learn to pay bills again, lay off my stuff.
Who's she talking to?
He whispered to Tabitha.
Henrietta, I think.
He frowned. Who?
An irritating ghost.
Karma set her keys down on the small table in the foyer before she placed her helmet on the coat tree. She came with the house, and we've been at war ever since she told me to get out. Nick arched a brow at her bravado. Had a ghost told him to hightail it? He'd vapor off so fast, all he'd leave behind was a blur.
Why don't you?
Karma looked at him as if he was the one who was insane for asking a logical question.
My house. I told her when she learns to pay the bills, I'll move out. But I'm not taking a hit on the price just because she's too lazy to pack her things and move on. And let's face it, she has a lot less to pack.
Karma tilted her head back to speak to the ceiling.
Start with me, and I'll break out the ghost torment equipment again. See how y'all like that, huh? I'll knock down walls, move furniture, and I'll start playing Bauhaus on all the speakers. I know what a big Peter Murphy fan you are not.
Okay. Nick took a step closer to the door. Amanda laughed. Relax, kid. We're here for Karma to commune with the spirits and see if they know what's after you and why you've been yanked from home.
With the exception of the LaLaurie Mansion, her house is the most haunted in the city. There have been more murders here than anywhere else in Louisiana.
Nick was aghast at her nonchalant tone over something that traumatized him. No wonder Maddox was always complaining about his older brother and the family Eric wanted to marry into.
Maddox was right. All the Devereaux sisters were nuts.
Are you serious?
Nodding, Tabitha pointed to the living room. There was still blood on the walls from the last double homicide when she moved in.
His jaw slack, he was completely flabbergasted as he faced Karma.
Why do you live here?
Any idea how much a house and a quarter costs, especially one this size?
I got it for a steal.
Yeah, but aren't you afraid?
Karma laughed at his concern. Baby, the scariest thing in this house is me. Unlike others, I know how to protect myself from the evil here and to torture it when it gets cute. Trust me, they have more to fear from me than I have from them. And it seriously pisses them off.
She headed up the stairs.
Nick really wanted to leave.
And I thought my life was whack.
Come on, Tabitha tugged at his arm. We'll protect you.
Yeah, that was comforting.
Never.
Nick glanced up at the large wrought iron light fixture over their heads and remembered when the one in Kirian's house had tried to turn him into hamburger. He really didn't want a repeat of that.
Just don't let nothing drop another chandelier on me.
With no real choice, he followed them upstairs to a bedroom that had been turned into a meditation room, except it had an altar in one corner, with a collection of African and Native American prayer fans lining one wall, along with leather bags and rattles made from different animals. A dozen painted rawhide drums hung on the opposite side. The walls around him were painted a light blue with gold and white stamped over it. Singing words Nick didn't understand, Karma began burning incense on the altar, while Tabitha and Amanda sat on burgundy floor cushions that had been arranged in a circle. Karma sprinkled some kind of herb thing over him before she swept the incense toward him with a large handmade feathered fan. Nick sank down on the cushion closest to him and looked at Tabitha and Amanda. They joined in with Karma's chant. Some invisible force pulled Nick's hair.
Hey,
he snapped, rubbing at his head where it stung. Karma said something in that language he couldn't decipher.
I hope you're telling it to leave me alone.
No sooner had he spoken than another spirit punched him in the back, knocking him forward. His anger rising, Nick hissed. The spirit jerked his hair again. Furious, he rose to his feet to confront his unseen tormentor. But faster than he could blink, something grabbed him by the throat and launched him into the air before it pinned him to the wall right in the middle of the prayer fans. Insane laughter rolled through the room like thunder. Unable to move, Nick struggled to breathe as something that felt like a boa constrictor wrapped hard around his body, squeezing it tight. Out of nowhere, a deep, masculine voice whispered in his ear,
Well, well. What have we here? A tiny little morsel being offered for my daily snack? Don't worry. The pain won't last long before I kill you.
Chapter 5. Nick's ears buzzed while Amanda, Tabitha, and Karma tried to pull him free from the wall where he was pinned. But all their efforts did was cause him more pain, tighten the hold of whatever had him.
I'm gonna die.
He had no powers to break free, no ability to fight, and it was obvious the women were every bit as helpless against whatever was attacking him as he was. He tried everything he could think of, but nothing worked. His sight dimmed. Closing his eyes and knowing it was useless, he called out for Caleb or Cody to come to him. He didn't know what else to do, and it wasn't in him to not at least try to fight. Man, what he wouldn't give for 1 second of his powers again. Even a misfire would be welcomed right now. All of a sudden, a battle cry echoed in the room. 1 minute, Nick was blacking out, and in the next, he was free. He hit the floor and landed on his back. Disoriented and paralyzed, he still couldn't move. His head continued to swim as he saw Cody in her sexy warrior armor battling a twisted shadow. It spat fire at her. She manifested a red shield that held a black phoenix in the center of it and drove the shadow back. Amanda, Tabitha, and Karma acted as if they couldn't see her at all. The three of them surrounded him.
I must be dead.
Why else would he see Cody and the shadow when the other three couldn't? Amanda tilted his head back so that she could feel for his pulse.
Is he dead?
Tabitha asked.
He's turning blue.
Amanda looked up.
Karma, call an ambulance.
She ran to obey. Even though he couldn't move, Nick could still see Cody as she fought like a boss. In a matter of seconds, she rammed the creature into the wall. With one last screech, it vanished. Cody quickly scanned the room for more threats. When her gaze met his, her face paled. She ran to him and knelt by his side.
Stay with me, Nick.
She leaned down and kissed him. The moment her tongue touched his, her breath filled his chest, and he finally could breathe again as her warmth spread through him. Yeah, he'd take a beating for her kiss any day and line up twice on Sunday.
I am such a sick masochist.
Amanda and Tabitha shrieked and scurried away from his body. Nick opened his eyes to find Cody still with him. Now dressed in a red sweater and jeans, she pulled back from his lips to smile down at him while the twins grabbed weapons from the wall. Nick reached up to cup Cody's soft cheek in his hand. No doubt about it, she was the most beautiful girl he'd ever seen, and never had he been more grateful for her presence.
You're really real.
She wrinkled her nose at his odd words.
Are you all right? They hit you really hard, didn't they?
Ignoring that, for once, he glanced around at the other women, who were now gaping at them.
I think I'm okay, but I don't know what happened.
Cody didn't respond to him. Instead, she locked gazes with Karma. We have to get him out of this house, fast. The longer he stays here, the worse it's going to get, and the more attacks he'll have. Tabitha glared at her.
Who are you?
What are you?
Amanda asked. Cody answered neither twin. Karma, you know I'm right. There are too many souls and demons that call this place home. We have to get him out. Clear us a path. Nodding, Karma moved to help Nick stand. With Cody on one side and Karma on the other, Nick rose to his feet. He still didn't know what was happening or why his body didn't want to listen to his brain, but he'd learned better than to hesitate while being attacked by unknown creatures. Best to get clear and then interrogate later.
How did you get here?
He asked Cody. She helped him down the stairs.
I think you drew me to you.
How? I don't have any powers left. She shrugged.
I don't know any other explanation.
I was on Menyara's porch to ask her where you were, and the next thing I knew, I was here with you. Too grateful to question it, he stumbled on the last step and barely caught himself before he dragged all three of them down. Leaning him against the wall, Karma left his side to open the front door while the twins pulled up the rear.
"I still want to know what you two are," Tabitha demanded.
"At the moment, unwanted guests."
Cody glanced around the house with a stern frown.
"What kind of place is this? I've never seen so many ghosts and demons in one location in my life. Not even a cemetery."
Amanda shrugged.
"Karma doesn't like to be alone."
Not wanting to think about that, Nick headed out the door with Cody. But as soon as he was through the threshold, she jerked to a stop and stayed inside. Her face pale, she tried to walk out and couldn't. She kept hitting an invisible wall. When Nick started back for her, Karma pulled him to a stop. She leveled a malevolent glare at Cody.
"You're a ghost?"
Cody ignored her question as she pounded against an unseen barrier.
"What is this?"
Nick rolled his eyes at Karma.
"She's not a ghost."
"Yes, she is."
Karma gently pushed him toward the stairs.
"I have a protection spell that prevents ghosts from leaving the house. It stops them at the door."
Tabitha touched Cody's arm. "She feels solid and warm." Karma gave her sister an irritated smirk.
"Step through and see for yourself."
Tabitha moved through the door without a problem, as did Amanda. Cody still couldn't leave the house. With an arrogance that was palpable, Karma folded her arms over her chest.
"Like I said, she's a ghost."
Unable to believe it, Nick stared at his girlfriend. It couldn't be true. It wasn't possible.
"Cody?"
Tears welled in her green eyes as she splayed her hand against the invisible barrier.
"The vision you had of the Malachi killing me in battle wasn't a dream, Nick. We bonded that night while I was trying to ground you. And you shared my memories. I died by your hand. You, as the Malachi, killed me."
His stomach hit the ground as total disbelief consumed him.
"I don't understand."
His dream had been clouded and strange. He'd been both Cody's protector and her killer.
"The man you stabbed in your vision, the one who ran to protect me, wasn't really you, Nick. That was my older brother you slew before you used his sword to kill me."
Horror invaded every part of his being as he saw himself in his demon form again in that battle. Cold, merciless, uncaring. He'd felt nothing as he cut through his enemies. Nothing as he cut down Cody and watched her die at his feet. Dear God, he'd actually laughed while she bled out. How could I ever find that funny? No wonder she wanted to kill him. It all made sense now. Well, some of it did. But he still had a ton of questions for her.
"But I've seen you bleed in my world. You were dying, like you were real."
Unshed tears made her eyes glisten.
"I have a body, Nick. It's just like yours, but it's a little different. And I can die again. There are many ways beings can perish."
Strangely, that made sense to him.
"Why didn't you tell me? Would you have believed me? Had I walked up to you and said, 'Hi, Nick, I'm a girl you killed. Nice meeting you.'"
Cody gave him a trembling smile.
"You still don't believe me even now. Not quite, anyway."
She looked past him to Karma. "You have to get him away from here. I can feel the powers surging again. Take him to St. Louis Cathedral as fast as you can. It's the only place he's safe." She glanced back at Nick, and the look in those green eyes seared him.
"Stay on holy ground until I get to you. Understand?"
"Yeah," he breathed. Karma pulled him back and handed him off to Tabitha.
"You get him to the altar. I'm staying for answers."
Nick started to protest, but one look at Tabitha's expression and he thought better of it.
She actually liked to punch things with extreme prejudice. He glanced back at Karma.
Just make sure you share those answers after you get them.
Don't worry. I'll tell you everything she says.
Nick locked gazes with Cody. She appeared so real and normal, so human. But she wasn't.
And neither was he. Dang, in all his wild speculations about who and what she was, this had never once entered his mind. Who would have thought?
Cody's a ghost.
Not just any ghost. Someone he would kill in the future.
His emotions were so tangled right now that he wasn't sure what he felt, other than lost, confused. Yeah, that was definitely the primary feeling.
Cody held her hand up to him. That and the sorrow and fear in her eyes tightened his chest.
He should probably hate her. That was the natural state of a Malachi. It was the emotion that came easiest to his species, yet he couldn't. They'd been through too much together, and while he didn't completely trust her, he did love her. In spite of common sense and even self-preservation. With one last look at her, he got into the car and buckled himself in.
Karma's not going to hurt her, is she?
Amanda backed out of the driveway while Tabitha stared after her sister and Cody. Nick's last view was Karma entering the house with a determined stride.
You want the truth or a lie? Tabitha asked.
I always prefer the truth.
I'm sure she's interrogating the ghost even as we speak.
Nick didn't like the sound of that. Interrogating how? The twins exchanged a look that concerned him even more. There was something they weren't saying.
What? Nick asked. What is she going to do to Cody?
Tabitha turned around in the seat so that she was no longer facing him.
If Karma doesn't like what she hears, she'll banish her.
Back to our world?
No, Nick. Into oblivion.
Chapter 6. Cody stepped back as Karma approached her like a hungry tigress. She wasn't afraid of the woman, not even a little. She'd grown up with Karma as one of her fiercest protectors, but she understood trying to protect what you loved. There was truly nothing more dangerous than a person guarding their family on their home territory. It was a lesson Karma had taught her well. So she would give Karma space and relieve her fears. Unlike Tabitha, who fought physically, Karma was a spiritual warrior. She would know and understand the world Cody came from better than anyone.
You don't have to be afraid of me, Karma. I'm not going to hurt you or your sisters.
They, too, were her family, and both Amanda and Tabitha had died fighting beside Cody's mother against the Malachi and his army.
Ever mistrustful of those she didn't know, Karma scoffed as she circled her, sizing her up as if they were about to battle. How do I know that?
Because I'm an Arel.
Only a subtle tensing of Karma's body betrayed her knowledge of Cody's species. Still, the woman wasn't about to give away anything else.
You say that like it's supposed to have meaning to me.
Cody laughed nervously at Karma's continued insistence on this song and dance of ignorance. But she couldn't blame her for being cautious. Karma was someone who had mind-traveled through the many ethers and who routinely talked to creatures like Cody, as well as those who were born of darkness, those who lied and deceived, those who would use human naivete to prey on their victims. Only a master sorceress with finely honed powers and extensive esoteric knowledge could have created the boundary that shielded this house and kept Cody and the others locked inside it.
You know what it means, Karma. The Arelim were protectors of the highest order. At one time, they had been nothing more than messengers for the Malachi and Sephirai, celestial gophers for the ancient gods and their servants. But after the first war of the gods that had ended both the Malachi and Sephirai bloodlines, the Arelim
had risen to be the guardians of order and truth. They were charged with ensuring that the human world didn't end, that the Malachi remained forever dormant. Karma shook her head. You can't be an Arel and a ghost. They're born immortal.
As was I. But even immortals can die under the wrong circumstances. And you're right, I wasn't born an Arel. Because of the blood of my parents, I was chosen to be one. I'm a Nakota, and all of my kind are selected from those who've died.
Finally, the light of recognition that they were on the same team sparked in Karma's eyes.
You're a soldier.
Cody hesitated at the label that didn't quite fit.
More of a guardian. I fight when I have to, but that's not my primary role.
Karma cocked her head as she continued to study Cody and read her aura.
I'm still confused.
You said Nick killed you, and yet you're here to protect him? Why?
That was definitely the question. And it was one Cody asked herself constantly. At times, she wasn't sure either, but whenever she looked into those vibrant blue eyes that showed her Nick's soul, she had clarity. If only it would last. Sighing, Cody walked around the small foyer that held traces of Karma's past and showed the very things the sorceress valued most. Her family. The walls were lined with pictures of Karma and her sisters and aunts and mother. Many were with their father, who smiled proudly in the midst of his 9 daughters. Tears choked her as Cody remembered her own father looking at her like that, of him holding on to her, afraid of letting her go and more terrified of keeping her with him because of the things that had been sent to kill them. Like Nick, her father had possessed a kind and, oddly enough, given the viciousness of his past, innocent soul. Even in spite of the fact that her father had been one of the fiercest ancient soldiers, a general of legend who had fought back the ancient gods until they'd been forced to resort to trickery to defeat him. Maybe that was why she was so drawn to Nick. He reminded her a lot of her father and brothers, a lot of her uncle, that indefatigable spirit that refused to buckle under any fight or obstacle. Over, under, around, or through, there's always a way. You don't give up, and you never give in. They can scar your body and take your freedom, but only you can surrender your heart and soul. Nothing is worth compromising yourself for. Stand fast and stand true. Always. That had been her father's motto that had seen him through centuries of horror, torture, and suffering. It was the motto Nakota clung to even in her darkest hours. She faced Karma.
Life is never simple. It's messy, complicated, and at times, debilitating. When I fought Nick as a living demigod, I alone drove him back. I had the Malachi and his army on the run.
Then how did he kill you?
I had been wounded in a previous battle, and my brother refused to let me fight alone.
While he was a fierce and skilled warrior in his own right, he didn't have the powers I did, and when he died, protecting me, I lost all reason. Even though I knew better, I let my anger grab hold of me, and I attacked in a blind rage. The Malachi didn't defeat me so much as I defeated myself.
Is that why you were chosen to be a Nakota?
Cody nodded.
I'm the only one left who can defeat a Malachi. The Nasaru.
The what?
The elite Arelim.
They're the ones born to their positions, and they're the ones who select the Nakodai from the fallen. They knew that I alone possessed the powers to take down a Malachi. And so here I am.
That suspicious light returned to Karma's eyes. I know there's more to this than you're telling me, but I still don't understand why you're helping the boy who killed you.
Cody wrapped her arms around herself as her
memories of the Ambrose Malachi surged. Even now, she could see that awful day in her mind when Ari had carried her toward safety. Bodies of their friends, family, and army had lined the battlefield. Blood had run like rainwater under their feet. She'd done her best to tell her brother that she was fine, in spite of her wounds, to put her down so that they could both return to battle. In true big brother fashion, Ari had refused to listen to her.
"There is nothing I will not do to protect my family."
Those words had brought a fury to the Malachi's eyes that seared her to this day. With a hell-born cry, the Malachi had headed straight for them. She tried to warn her brother, but